Kevin Durant taking shots at the Knicks?
And the NBA still scrambling to recover from the China controversy.
And I've got my impressions from Zion's first preseason game and some other early preseason impressions for you. It's the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA. Let's do this.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA, the daily podcast covering everything you want to know about the association. And on Wednesdays, I'm your co-host Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter, and the host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast.
And I'm John Corrales, at Reds Army underscore John on Twitter, and the host of the Locked On Celtics podcast.
So we got a lot to cover today, talking about Kevin Durant taking some shots at the Knicks, the China situation, some preseason observations. Before we get to all of that, though, don't forget, subscribe to Locked On NBA wherever you get your podcast from. The season is like less than 3 weeks away. You want to keep up to date on everything. Locked On NBA, Monday through Friday, the place to do it. So, John, we like to take shots at the Knicks like all the time. And the Wizards.
Yes. It's fun.
But particularly the Knicks. We're not the only people that apparently like to take shots at the Knicks, because Kevin Durant did that the other day. He was on a radio station over there in New York. I don't have it in front of me. And said, quote, "I think a lot of fans look at the Knicks as a brand and expect these young players who, in their lifetime, don't remember the Knicks being good. I've seen the Knicks in the finals, but kids coming up after me didn't see that. That whole brand of the Knicks to them is not as cool as, let's say, the Golden State Warriors or even the Lakers or the Nets now. The cool thing right now is not the Knicks," end quote. He's not wrong, is he?
No, not at all. I mean, there's nothing cool about the Knicks. It's kind of antiquated that the Knicks, they owned New York because their competition was the Nets all along, but it was the New Jersey Nets. And now that they're in Brooklyn, they are growing in popularity. Obviously, they made this splashy signing, but Brooklyn, just in general, the borough of Brooklyn has grown. It's risen to be kind of almost like the heart of New York for younger people. Manhattan, that area, it's all older folks. You got Broadway, you've got all the landmarks and all of that stuff. But for younger people, the 20-somethings, it's Brooklyn. Brooklyn's the cool place. Brooklyn's the hipster place. And so it kind of fits the vibe in New York that the Brooklyn Nets have kind of risen to this level. And in the end, good is good. And you can only be bad this long. For, you know, it's not sustainable to be this bad this long. They're lucky that they're the Knicks and they're in the number one market. My question now is, now that Brooklyn has the stars, now that Brooklyn is the cool place, I wonder if this is going to be what finally gets the Knicks to do something different, because they haven't had to and now they might.
Yeah, you know, I don't think, you know, Kevin Durant spurning them is going to be the wake-up call that it maybe should have been. And, like, he had no interest in playing for the Knicks after basically the Knicks and James Dolan, even in the middle of the season, saying, like, yeah, people want to play for us. We're going to sign some people. We probably joked about it on an episode.
Oh, and totally did.
And they didn't get anybody. And, like, they should have come. I think they put out that original statement being, like, this offseason was a disappointment. And, like, maybe they were kind of grasping the reality of their situation. But then they've walked that back recently. I don't have the exact quotes, and I don't remember who said it or what. But they basically said, like, we did everything we wanted to do in free agency. And
wow.
It's just, it's, like, laughable. Like, no, I'm sorry, signing Julius Randle to a 3-year deal is not doing what you wanted to do in free agency. Signing all of the power forwards that were out there, they're team friendly deals, team options in the second or third year, but you missed out on Kevin Durant. You missed out on Kyrie Irving. You didn't get, you didn't get anybody. You didn't even get a second or third tier free agent probably. So the fact that they kind of walked back being like, this was a disappointment, to being like, this is what we wanted to do, That gives me some pause to think that, like, okay, this was the wake-up call that they needed, because it should have been. You wouldn't be saying that, and you might just be quiet and trying to prove why players should come be with you. And I think you're right. Like, I don't hold the Knicks in – I'm 33. I don't hold the Knicks in this kind of, like, revered state that a lot of people tell me. I've never seen a game in Madison Square Garden, but I can't imagine the atmosphere is that much different from some of the other arenas I've been to, and you might be able to answer that. But, like, I just don't see this appeal that I get that older people have. And, like, I feel washed as hell at 33, so it's weird me saying that, but you get where I'm coming from.
Sure, totally. I am older, so we'll leave it at that. there is this fascination, because Madison Square Garden is right there in the heart of Manhattan. You walk there from Times Square. It hosts some of the biggest events. Again, it was the arena in New York, so it hosted all of the big things. Now it has competition. So why I bring up the wake-up call, it's not that this particular thing is a wake-up call. It's that now there's competition, and the NBA doesn't have to show Knicks games to put a marquee game in the New York market. Okay. You show a Nets game and you're still in the number one market in the United States. The Knicks saying that this is what they wanted to do all along, it's like Danny Ainge claiming that this was their plan A for the Celtics. It was their plan A after Kyrie left. Their plan A was to actually get Kyrie back, but their plan B ascended to plan A. So for the Knicks, their plan A was to get Durant and Kyrie. That didn't come together. So their other plan ascended to the top, and afterwards they did what they did. And I will give them credit. They are in position to go after Giannis and be players again in two seasons when the next crop of big free agents comes out.
Yeah, like, so, the contracts aren't the issue, I would say, right?
No, but they've positioned themselves well. Like, they recovered the way you're supposed to recover. Like, and they've got some level of talent. Like, they won't be the worst team in the league, but whatever. They've positioned themselves the way a small market team would if they missed out. You know what I mean? Like, they are now, they've got their 2-year contracts. They positioned themselves well. But there's going to be a big question. Does that have the same appeal as Brooklyn or other marquee markets? Social media has changed the game. You don't have to be in a big market to have that appeal. Giannis plays for the Milwaukee Bucks. Everybody knows who Giannis is. Yep. He's got his own signature shoe. Good is good. Russell Westbrook became a megastar in Oklahoma City. You know, Jimmy Butler is a big name, and he only recently played in the big market. So it's not necessary to be in that big market, even though we just saw somewhere where your guys kind of went to these big markets. But guys just want to be, especially young players, they just want to be in a place where they feel comfortable. And yeah, that cool factor, sure. But first of all, they want the money.
Yes, winning's cool, right?
Right. So money talks. So anybody that has the money, if another team doesn't, then the team with the money becomes very attractive. If multiple teams have the money, then the next thing, can I win? What's my status? What's my personal brand going to be? That stuff comes into play. But who has the money is number one. If the Knicks have the money down the road and they're the only ones with the money, then great. They'll start signing people. But the appeal, that thing that you have to be a Knick when you go to New York, that is absolutely done.
You, to wrap up, you mentioned one thing, and I can't speak here. That's the Knicks. There we go. The Knicks have positioned themselves well. We've said this so many times before, couple off seasons, you know, we've said this and nothing's happened. And it's just, what's there a reason to believe that it's going to change anymore unless they take some other steps to kind of regain, I guess, maybe the luster that they haven't had. And that's, like you said, you kind of outlined it. There's actual competition there now if it is New York or bust. And I think we've kind of seen recently it's not necessarily like that.
Right. So, I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah. So we will move on from that topic, talk about one that's a little bit trickier. But before we do that, today's edition of Locked On NBA, brought to you by Indochino. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering Locked On at checkout. All right, the China situation is continuing to unfold with the NBA, with the NBA put in just a very difficult position regarding this with no necessarily right or wrong answer. I don't know. I'm kind of like the statement that Steve Kerr put out there where I'm really not as informed about this as maybe I should be, and I'm learning more by the day. Certainly doesn't seem like good things are happening over there with some of this, but this is just a mess for the NBA, and it's got a lot of different directions and impact that this thing could really have after, you know, once we start to get some of the fallout from it.
Yeah, it's so complicated, and it's a lot of people want to pretend to be experts. It boils down to some very simple concepts.
Yeah.
But the question gets very complicated when you're looking at it from a business perspective. My biggest takeaway here is that, yes, Maury triggered this thing, but the NBA, like China doing things that, let's just call them questionable by United States standards,
no, that's
by our standards.
100% safe to say.
Yeah, that's not new. That's not something that just happened this week or when these protests began in Hong Kong. That's been going on for a very long time. The NBA has been in business with China for a very long time. So they, all this criticism of the NBA for, oh, now they're compromising their morals. They and every other business that's doing business in China compromise their morals just by setting foot in that country and agreeing to do business with them. What we're seeing now is this, it's almost like a pimple sprouting that Maury just triggered something and there's this kind of dust up, but this stuff's been going on in China for a while. And this moral outrage that's been going on, if you're morally outraged by this, you should have been morally outraged from the beginning. And I don't want to sound glib, but like if you've accepted the NBA doing business in China, then it's almost like what you lose a leg to stand on.
Yeah, like, that's fair. Like, yeah, it's I don't want to go as far as saying it's hypocritical because, like, I get it. This is also entertainment. And if you want to kind of separate it from that stuff, like, I don't necessarily have an issue with people doing that. But then when you kind of come in. So the update on this, which is kind of interesting, is Adam Silver seemed to try and thread the needle pretty well. And I think I thought the most recent statement he put out clarifying the NBA's stance the other day was pretty good and should have been what they did in the first place. And then China basically, or Tencent basically just said, nah, we don't care. Is that like the right reading of this, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. It's difficult from the China perspective. Like we're, how do I say that? It's very difficult to even analyze this, but their official stance is what it is. And because they're kind of a totalitarian government, like the people who run Tencent, the people who run these other leagues kind of have to march in lockstep and take these stands. And I think ultimately money talks. So there's this big thing that's happening now. The NBA has apologized. Well, not apologized. Nobody's actually apologized.
No one's apologized. But China wants, I refer to China, and it's again to their government, which controls a lot of the media over there, basically saying, we want you guys to apologize. And, you know, Maury needs to give like a very contrite apology, even if he doesn't actually mean it. And the NBA is not going to ask him to do it. And it seems like both sides of this are kind of in a staring contest waiting to see who's going to blink first.
Right.
And who blinks first, there's a lot of consequences on this on either side. You know, the NBA doesn't, you know, for saying they're kind of the progressive league, really, you know, kind of being in the corner of the players, expressing themselves and their beliefs, even if some of the other people in the NBA don't agree with that. You know, if you're kind of saying that, you've got to kind of stick strong on this. But all of that revenue that comes from China, and it sounds like maybe they're going to cancel some games, they might not broadcast them. All of that factors in, and this is, in terms of an on-court NBA type stuff, moral stuff aside, is intriguing to me because all of that money factors into that miracle thing, the BRI, basketball-related income, which is what the salary cap is set on. And if you lose some of that money, the salary cap lowers, and the impact of that is really significant at some point.
Yes, if they are impacted, that's going to be a big problem. Because if Tencent goes away, if they cancel their deal, then millions, it's actually like a 1.5 billion.
Yeah.
That's the overall value of their deal. If for some reason they cancel that deal, then that's money that's going to have to come out of the BRI and salaries will be lower. And the percentages of the maxes and all that stuff would be lower. I just don't think it's going to come to that. Like
that's a good thing from on court perspective. I'll say
right. I think as much as there's like people are upset and there's like this outrage that's going on, the NBA seems to have like kind of set its position. Like they're trying to maintain their progressive league status. China is basically saying we demand satisfaction and challenging the NBA to a duel, but with this much money at stake, they'll figure it out. Like something else is going to come up and they'll quietly figure this out and they're going to move on. There's no way. Like Tencent gave the NBA that much money for a reason, because half a billion people consume NBA basketball and they get to sell to those people.
Yeah, that's kind of my read on this too. And I wouldn't be surprised if you maybe see the NBA just be like, okay, cool, don't broadcast our games, we're fine, we don't need you guys, trying to maybe call a bluff there. And then Tencent also has so much money to lose that maybe they kind of acquiesce. It's kind of one of those things where like money talks, and it kind of makes sense for maybe both sides to find that middle ground, which is what Adam Silver seemed like he tried to do. And then, you know, it's up to everyone individually on how they feel about the moral side of thing. But this could significantly impact the league if maybe things go in a poor direction. And again, that depends on your read on all of this. But it's a really intriguing story that, you know, it should be resolved, I guess, somewhat soon. But man, this ended up being almost like a crisis that I don't think anyone really anticipated coming up.
You know what I'd love to see? I'd love to see the NBA really dig in and say, okay, really? And then have all of their social media outlets, all the team outlets, all of the official NBA outlets tweet the same picture Daryl Morey did and just say, you want it? You want to test this? We're going all in. We're backing our guy. We're in. We're the progressive league. We stand for human rights. Like, For me and for you, like it's a no-brainer. Like freedom, human rights, all that stuff. Like I don't know if I came off differently in this whole segment, but like that's obvious. Like that stuff's obvious. But the interjection of billions of dollars and money and all of that stuff changes the entire calculus of this. The NBA, I'd love to see them just say, all right, you think you know, you're trying to say that you're gonna take your money away from us, but you gave money to us because you're going to make more
than what you paid. Right.
Right.
Exactly. And so that's where I see this heading. That's my initial kind of read on everything. I don't know. Again, it's really intriguing because you can look at it and kind of game it out. Like, does the Players Association want this partnership to end? Because if the BRI does lower, that means lower, you know, less money for the players out there in free agency. That also means teams are playing the tax. It might mean trades or cuts happen because the salary cap's lower. There's a lot of impact on this that,
oh, totally.
Like, it's just, you keep kind of going down that rabbit hole, which we should not do because we have a time limit we want to hit on the podcast. But it's wild how this can kind of spiral in a different direction. Just something to keep in mind as this story unfolds a little bit more, which we'll probably have an update probably tomorrow and a couple days from now as well. So before we get into the final segment, another national crisis is over, and that has to do with Ben Simmons making a three, which we're going to talk about in a second here. Don't forget, subscribe to Locked On NBA wherever you get your podcast from. Here for you guys 5 days a week, breaking down all the games that you watched and didn't watch, giving you our takes on all of the biggest stories around the league. No one else is Monday through Friday like this, so subscribe wherever you get your podcast from. All right, he's no longer a coward. Ben Simmons hit a three. Who just canceled the season and hand the Sixers the championship?
The celebration of that three was hilarious, like by his teammates. And I'm just kind of like, I've got my tweet deck open and just seeing some of the reaction. It really is hilarious. That he did take the three, but the clock was winding down, and I think it was kind of like why not? This wasn't like a swing the ball, take a step into a three type of thing. But he took it, he hit it, and you know, it also. It was an important three because it put them up 41 points at halftime.
Well, that just ends any sort of comeback at that point, right?
Big deal. It's a big deal. But yeah, he stepped into a three with no defense at the end of the clock when it was running down.
Because they dared him to shoot. It wasn't like, you know, he took what the opponent gave him. That's nice
step. Yeah. Nice step. Next, I want to see him catch and shoot in rhythm, open. And let's now see if he can start taking those threes. But it's hilarious. The reaction by his teammates really shows you something. So it's pretty funny.
Look, it's again, there was no defense, but that was kind of why he took the three. If they're like smothering him, he probably doesn't rip that. But man, good for him. Does that just take like so much pressure off him? I'm wondering, and like, does he just feel really good now to hit a meaningless three in a game that doesn't matter? Again, like you said, with no real defense, even though, again, what can you do? But all right, that's like, again, cancel the season. That's preseason should just be over too. You got Ben Simmons shooting threes. Do you have any other thoughts or anything else you're curious about when it comes to preseason, some of these games coming up or some of the games that have already been played?
I am curious to get your take, Mr. Pelican, on a guy that people might not have heard of. His name's Zion Williamson. Unique name, unique guy. Why don't you give us...
unheralded draft prospect.
You know, I personally am going to go on a limb, think he's going to be okay. But you're the Pelicans guy. I really think we should have your take on the podcast.
Yeah, so I think what you saw from him the other night against the Atlanta Hawks is like exactly what you should expect from him this year and what you're going to see from him this year. It was kind of similar to what he did in Summer League 2, which I also thought was a pretty good encapsulation of what he can do. Dude is just an absolute monster, a beast. You look at him and like he, for being 6'6 without shoes, 6'8 with shoes, is just an absolute freight train coming down the lane with unbelievable power and explosiveness. But you can also see his finesse around the rim. And that is like a dude who's just kind of in complete control of his body. Sometimes you see rookies come in, they're a little long and it feels like, I don't know, you know, one side of their brain is working on their left arm, the other's on their right, and the legs are somewhere in between that. And they just haven't grown into their bodies yet. That is not the case for him. He is in command of kind of everything he's doing. He had a really nice up and under layup that kind of showed you the finesse side, and that instead of just going through you or over you, he can go around you as well and score that way. The jumper is not there. He took two threes, missed them both, a little bit flat. That could be because he's still not kind of in game shape just yet. You could see he was a little, not out of shape, but winded in that one summer league game. They've worked on his conditioning a lot, but he was not do, he was doing basketball, but not a ton of it because he had all these other things that, you know, a first or the number one overall pick's got to do in the offseason. So he's working towards being able to kind of play in a really fast paced system where they're going to play up tempo in the fast break, early offense kind of thing. But he's a monster on the defensive glass, the offensive glass too. He chases down his own shot really well. He can go above you, around you in terms of trying to get a rebound. Like, it's really hard to box him out, it looks like. And so overall, that's kind of what you're expecting with him. The thing that kind of surprised me, I think, the most was the different ways the Pelicans got him the ball, where he had a full head of steam, a lot of momentum going downhill towards the basket. They ran a lot of pistol action where you have the guard kind of bringing it up to the right or the left side, getting the ball to like one of the wings there, and then kind of having Zion cut around maybe on a dribble handoff. And if you can get him the ball while he's in motion and already moving towards the basket, you may as well just get out of the way, which is what a lot of Hawks players did and made business decisions to not be put on a poster. And he does it in a variety of ways, whether it's backdoor cuts, whether it's kind of the trail man after someone drives. You get him the ball while he's moving, it's basically just game over at that point. Defensively, he looked a little lost out there. The Pelicans are putting in a new system. He's also a rookie. It's game one of preseason. I don't think, you know, we should expect too much from that. I'll say, you know, he has a chance at winning Rookie of the Year, but with the way he plays without that jumper, I wonder if that could maybe kind of elude him and go to someone who has maybe a little bit more complete game for their rookie year, but Zion still probably has the higher ceiling.
I agree with basically everything you said. I was going to bring up the way they got him the ball with momentum towards the basket.
It was good, man.
It was very good. That was very good and very smart. That's how he has to be used. I think in transition, you're going to have to account for him or else you risk getting dunked on. In the half court, you can't get lazy because they will find a way to get him the ball, and he will do those things. If he has to face up and try to break guys down off the dribble, I don't think that's going to go well. I don't think they're going to dare him to shoot until he proves he can.
Yep.
So, and I agree. I think my pick for Rookie of the Year might be somebody else, might be more of like a Ja Morant or somebody like that, because he's got less help and he has to take more shots and he's going to have a little bit more, I think, eye popping counting numbers, which stand out. So I think Zion, from the Rookie of the Year standpoint, there is a little too much talent on the Pelicans. They don't need him to do those things. So it might cost them Rookie of the Year, but it's much better for his development, much better for the team. So I think that's pretty much kind of what I expected. It kind of confirmed what I thought, at least after one preseason game of Zion.
Yeah, like, we don't want to read too much into a preseason game.
Yes, we do.
I mean, I did on the podcast, don't get me. I did an entire show basically just on that game the other night, which is probably way too much for preseason. I also did a full podcast on an open practice they had where they just scrimmaged against each other. That's how hyped we all here are for Zion. But look, Jrue Holiday is going to probably be the leading scorer on this team, maybe Brandon Ingram, and it probably puts Zion at three on this. And they're taking him along slowly. He's got massive expectations outside of the organization. Inside the organization, they don't want to put that kind of pressure on him. And maybe if he has a subpar stretch, it really hurts his confidence. They're being kind of very protective about him. Like, if I were to pick anyone for Rookie of the Year, I would take Zion over any other individual name, but I'd certainly take the field over Zion, I think, is the best way to put it.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair.
That's like a cop-out answer, but that's kind of the way
That's how we do it. So you're never wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And then if he wins, I'm just like, cool. Yeah, he should have. He's great. He dunks the ball over people all the time. Look, the Pelicans team is going to be fun. They're going to be borderline for the playoffs. I don't know if they're necessarily in. But man, it was just nice after last season and the slog that it was and the AD stuff. And there's some stuff that came out with that today to just have like a fun basketball team to watch. That is underrated, even if the team is not actually winning games.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Like, after all of that, this really is going to be a fun team. Like, this is a league pass team for sure. And even if it's just like, I just found myself kind of gawking, like, my analyst kind of view went away. I'm like, oh my God, look at this guy.
He's basically like Mutt's watched what StubHub released, and I don't know how official all of this stuff is, their top 10 in-demand NBA teams. And the Pelicans come in at number 9. That's pretty good for a team that was terrible last year and hasn't really been consistently good. And it's just the Zion hype is very real. So I know everyone's going to be breaking down his game, and we'll probably be talking about him a good bit here on Locked On NBA. And that's going to do it for this edition of Locked On NBA. Thank you all for listening. Don't forget, subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. And on Wednesdays, I'm your co-host, Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter.
And I am John Corrales, at Reds_Army_John on Twitter.
Thank you all for listening, and we'll be back with you all next week.